With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to Face to Face. This is a show about change and about what's next. It's a show that wants to ask questions, peel back the layers of our average everyday experience, and go beyond scratching the surface. We interview amazing people with incredible ideas and stories who have done wild, weird, and wonderful things. Remember that imagination shared creates collaboration, and collaboration creates community, and community inspires social change. I'm David Peck, and this is Face to Face.
I believe people have an ability to find beauty and hope even amidst the horrors of war. So says Viveka Melky, my next guest. She's the curator of a new exhibition that is touring across the country and into Europe called War Flowers. You can check it out and find out more about it, warflowers.ca. Viveka and I talk about the importance of being human. By the way, she's a return guest. We spoke to her a couple of years ago about her film at Hot Docs called After Circus. She's a filmmaker. She's a POV, a point of view filmmaker. We talk about why memory matters. We talk about how she actually brought this whole touring art exhibition to bear and to life. It's about narrative. It's about story. It's about veterans. It's about history and about being good parents and about flowers. And how cool is that? And how interesting is that? It's about sense and what draws us in and what reminds us of, again, what it means to be human. Viveka is really concerned about the fact that history might be disappearing. You're going to hear more about that and about floriography. How cool is that? By listening in on this interview. So don't go away. Viveka Melky is coming right up. And don't forget face2facelive.ca for more podcasts. You can find out, I'm coming up on 360 interviews, I believe. Hot Docs is coming up, and believe it or not, already starting to think about TIFF. And don't forget that on patreon.com, you can support the work that I'm doing as well with my podcasting on face2facelive.ca. Coming right up, War Flowers and Viveka Melky. Well, welcome to Face to Face. We are joined by a very special guest today, a returning special guest, a filmmaker, an artist, a creator, a writer, a poet. Viveka Melky is here today to talk about her new touring art exhibition, War Flowers, that is on from January 24th to March 25th, 2018, at the Campbell House Museum in Toronto. You've walked by this museum and you don't even know it's a museum. It's at the corner of Queen and University. Check it out. Viveka, thank you for joining us today. I am absolutely thrilled. We're in the attic of the Campbell House. How cool is that?
It's an honor to be here. And David, what I love about talking to you is that we met when I was doing After Circus at Hot Docs here in Toronto.
We did.
About 3 years ago now. And now you're talking to me as a curator.
I know, isn't it? It's amazing, right?
It is. Well, that's the life of an artist. That's the life of a story. And the fact is that not all stories end up being films. Some of them end up being exhibitions. Some of them end up being books, circuses. What's important is telling the story.
What's important is telling the story. I mean, if that's not the... what are we, 32 and a half seconds in and we already have a soundbite? This is amazing. How come I knew this was going
to
happen?
It's just true. It's just, you know, I tend to... It's talking to you. You get me straight to the point of what matters.
So give us a little bit of context, history about the exhibition itself. I mean, we're happy to talk to you about how you got it funded and all that kind of stuff as well. But tell me more about I mean, to me, the whole exhibition's rooted in memory, it
yes,
seems to me.
And exactly.
We're absolutely going to be talking about love as well. That's going to come up for sure. But tell me your own sort of journey to this.
Thank you, because that is the question I think that any POV artist or point of view artist has to address. And let's not shy away from the fact that this is a filmmaker's exhibition.
Nice, interesting.
We've had folks from the CBC come here, and they look around and they say, "This is a filmmaker's exhibition," because we approach the story in a different way. Perhaps I will leave the audience to judge that. But the exhibition came about for me because I've been filming with veterans, and I've been filming stories of conflict for about 13 years now. And I have a very deep concern about history disappearing. I have a concern about systems of owning history, whether it's archival photographs or whether it's, the investment that we make into transcribing letters from 100 years ago. I'm worried about history disappearing on our landscape. I have been making films in this vein for a number of years now. And so when I found the box of when I found the box that had the letters of George Stephen Cantley, and they were given to me by a gentleman called Bruce Bolton in Montreal, I knew that I was looking at the largest collection of First World War flowers that we now know is one of the largest collections in North America. However, I knew that it wasn't enough. And that's a terrible thing to say. But the truth is, if you are going to engage people in history, in Canadian history, and come at that from two different angles, I am a first-generation Canadian, and none of this history is my own. So how am I going to care who on earth was John McCrae?
Right.
How am I going to care about Julia Drummond? What does it matter that Vimy happened?
Right,
I'm from West
right,
Africa. Right. This is not my story.
Right.
So that was the first point that I always carry with me when I'm telling a story. And the second is I have a 7-year-old daughter who is going to grow up to be a teenager. Not that all teenagers are doing this, but there's a lot of texting going on, and the attention span can be limited when we come to talking about history. So taking those two points of view, having spoken in schools to young people, knowing that I am absolutely not making generalization, because there are some who love it, but there are many who just don't understand it. I came to the idea of an exhibition with one line that was important. What are you going to feel when you walk out of this story? I didn't want to bombard you with statistics and facts, and I wanted you to have those, but what really mattered to me was that you maybe walked away understanding one fraction of what it felt like to go to war, what it felt like to be a veteran of the Second World War who I have spoken to. And so what I did was I took the flowers, the 10 flowers that you will see in this exhibition, and I added the language of floriography. And floriography is the Victorian language of flowers that was used to express emotions. And so we have in the exhibition Eternal Sleep, which is the poppy. We have heather, which is solitude. So you have these elements. You know what? I just had a blank there. I'm going to say heather. I'm sorry. I think it's lavender and solitude. Excuse me, because I'm tired. So I'd like to say that you have mother's love, that is the daisy. So each flower has a meaning. And the point of using floriography was to give the language of war to the veterans who I have spent time with and to help them express what that commitment was. It was also to break the silence. The Victorian era was a time where you didn't share your emotions, and I know how hard it is for veterans to share what they have experienced. We're talking about Second World War veterans, of course. So in my time interviewing with them, I took those memories, those experiences, the words they had told me, and I wrote the 10 I believes. And in each station has an I believe. I believe that grief is internal while mourning is public, is the poppy, Eternal Sleep. I believe that a mother's love has no limits, Julia Drummond, English Daisy. So I took those and I made the I Believes, and I gave the I Believes to two artists. One was Alexandra Bachand. She is a perfumer from Magog, Quebec. And the other was Mark Rains Roberts. He's a crystal artist here in Toronto. And I asked them to interpret what the word memory, solitude, mother's love, what it meant for them, and to create their own art and their own meaning for that, I believe, and for the crystal and for the scent that they created.
So you want me to feel something walking out. Is that about memory? Is that connecting to memory in some way, even if I don't have an understanding of what war really is? Is it about empathy?
Yeah.
For these men and women.
Because what I do believe, is you do have a memory. In your life, you have lived some conflict.
Right.
You have lived some memory of your grandfather's knee and the pipe that he used to smoke.
Right.
Or the scent in Mother's Love Station which makes me think of my grandmother or think of my daughter when she was young, and that talcum powder smell. You have those memories.
I can smell the pipe tobacco.
Exactly. That's one. It makes me think of my dad who used to smoke
my
pipe.
My grandfather in England.
Yeah. So those memories are completely illogical. They have no meaning. I cannot even tell. There are no words for that. That's personal to you. And so what we're trying to do is have you connect to your memories and tell you that human nature, in fact, does not change. Whether it's the First World War, whether it's Korea, whether it's Normandy, these are the same emotions of human nature. And unfortunately, as I say in the station, Resolve to Win, I believe that war is inherent to human nature, as is the desire for victory. And that's what I'm saying about this, is that this is not... people sort of think the First World War is far away. Actually, unfortunately, those things have not changed. And that's what I'm trying to say, is that not only has that not changed, but let's do something one step more. And let me speak as a first-generation immigrant. Hope is eternal. It's amazing. I chose the crystals and to work with Mark Rains Roberts because they are the light in the darkness.
Yeah, but there is always light. You're an artist. You're just a hopeful idealist, aren't you?
Absolutely not. I'm an artist, which means I'm a survivor.
Interesting.
Being an artist is not easy, and making history is a fight. Let us not shy away from that fact.
So this idea of war being inherent to human nature clearly, probably has ruffled a few feathers.
Yes,
yeah.
It has. But we're so good at it, war.
We are very good at it.
We're very good at it.
Yeah, I'm not sure who it was. I think it might have been Pascal who said, the philosopher Pascal, you know, the Pense, he said the time that we're most, where we find most pleasure is when we're killing others.
My God.
That's a Peckian paraphrase, by the way. So if anyone wants the real quote, send me a note and we'll find it. But yeah, I think we are pretty good at it.
You know, the station of Resolve to Win has a very testosterone smell to it. Resolve to Win.
But
David, sorry.
Yeah, go.
You wanted to keep me from these shores? That's a resolve to win also. To ask somebody who is fleeing Worcestershire, we do not put our children in a boat unless the sea is safer than the land. Resolve to win? Nothing would stop me immigrating here. You don't look back, you look forward. And that's what Resolve to Win is about. It's not just about war. It's about human nature and struggle. And that's why we
about
were honored.
Stepping into it.
Stepping into it, taking it on. And we had, I remember the day when the exhibition was at the Canadian War Museum, which it has been, and it's just arrived in Toronto. I remember there was a Syrian refugee, a mother, standing at Mother's Love, and she was crying. And she said to me, and I spoke to her in Arabic, because I do speak Arabic, and I said to her, "Are you all right?" And she said, "This doesn't change." And that's what we're trying to say.
Goosebumps.
I'm trying to say these are stories from yesterday, unfortunately, and fortunately that I think resilience and hope and finding beauty in darkness, those things don't change either. They're incredible.
Well, the irony of flowers and war.
Well, that he managed to stop
walking. To a day, right?
He was saying 2 letters a day, but the fact that he stops and picks these flowers in the middle of the Battle of the Somme. I mean, probably not in the middle, but he was taking them from billets and hedges, and it says in the letters, stolen or taken from a garden or,
imagine
you know,
him loading his rifle and out of his peripheral vision,
he's thinking,
seeing a flower in the
and
distance.
He's thinking of a one-year-old back
one.
Home. Yeah, he's thinking of a one-year-old at home, because is he there? He's there to defend, to protect, to do something that maybe many of us would question doing.
Well, the irony of the killing and the violence to get to peace is just so deeply disturbing, isn't it? I mean, Can't there be? Okay, now I'm the idealist here. Can't there be a better way? I mean, so if
thank we're, God we're idealists.
I know. Agreed.
Because we need to be.
Yeah. Yeah. No. For
that's
sure.
The thing, and you can't. I don't think you can get rid of that. I've carried it my whole life. I pray for it. I hope for it. The favorite archive in the exhibition is in the Station of Grace.
Mm.
And it's a German and a Canadian helping each other through Passchendaele.
Right.
That's the favorite archive of the majority of people that come to the exhibition. Well, because it's compassion.
Right.
And it's how we want to be. Despite the 68,000 names of the dead that surround you in the exhibition, because I believe that you have to name to give power. And I wanted to give them that power by naming.
Tell me about some of the things that you've done in the exhibition that, like the 68,000 names that haven't been done before, in the sort of the representation of war and of memory and so on.
Just the very idea of taking flowers and letters and putting a language of flowers into the language of war.
Mm.
That was unique. One of the most unique, it's incredible, Alexandre Bachand's idea of an olfactory exhibition, that your memory, your personal memories can be stimulated, can be triggered by a scent. We know this, but believe me, come and see it, because you'll be blown away. I started crying when I smelled the scent of John McCrae's station, Eternal Sleep. And I didn't know why, because it reminds you of death. And that's amazing. That says to me, we're sitting on the corner of Queen Anne University, one of the busiest cities in the world, and you come to this exhibition and you feel like you're in a church. You feel like you're in silence. It's contemplative, and that's what we were trying to do. We want to surround you. So the exhibition, as I've been told, and I humbly say this, after 160,000 people have now gone through the exhibition.
Wow, it's amazing.
Because I, as any artist, I create, but I don't ask what people are going to feel until they tell me what they felt. So 160,000 people later, we now know that people are feeling, they're understanding what it was to go to that war, what it was to be involved in it. I've had veterans who stand at the healing station, as we call it, which is Stitchwort, the flower, and they're crying, and they start talking and talking and talking, and they're telling me their story because we got it. We got it right. I had a veteran from Vietnam who visited the Reefwood Gardens this summer, and he said to me, "You got it."
Wow.
I wish I hadn't got it, but we did get it.
Right.
We understood something. So that's what the exhibition is doing that's unique. And that has been a surprise to us, the creators. We never knew we could go this far, but each one of us gave of ourselves. And I'm talking to you as a writer and an artist yourself. You know that you have to let something die to let something live. And we all had to give up a part of ourselves.
Mm.
But when we switched on the exhibition and the lights and the music and the scent, that's when we looked at each other and I remember Claude Langlois, the sound designer, said, "This is bigger than us."
Yeah.
We didn't realize what we were doing.
So memory, hope, how much of this would you say is kind of, are people reflecting on their own sense of grief and their own past?
Absolutely.
On the cab ride home, on the TTC ride home, on the walk home, on the drive home, reflecting on other, like you said earlier, issues of conflict in their own lives, unresolved tension, reconciliation, relationships. I mean, it's remarkable
how
deep this actually does go.
Commitment. It's incredible.
It really is.
People are, I think, connecting in a time when we are very disconnected.
Mm.
Everything is a soundbite, right? You and I know this. We're probably both on Facebook. And I am being fed what an algorithm has said I'm interested in. So I think what I'm saying is step into this world.
I bought a pair of shoes a few months ago. Facebook's still trying to sell me the same pair of shoes. I don't know what's going on with that. I think there's something wrong with the algorithm.
We created this monster.
Yeah, it's a monster, yeah.
No, I think that people are, I again humbly say that I think people are feeling connected. I had someone come into the exhibition yesterday, and she was, you know, in the pace of Toronto, which I feel also. And then she sat on the bench in the exhibition, and 20 minutes later she said, "I feel so calm. I don't understand." Well, it's because we've pressed pause.
Mm.
We've pressed pause, and we've said, just sit with us for a minute. Listen, look, and you are surrounded by 10 optical crystals that right. are giving off light. It's incredible. So it's not surprising. The soundtrack is amazing, too. It's composed for the exhibition by Marie-Claire Saint-Don.
It's a beautiful collaborative
yes.
experience.
I was going to say those are the piece, best things. Let's talk about making history in a collaborative way.
In a collaborative way.
Even if that way is confrontational.
Well, it's going to be more meaningful. Hopefully you're going to bring different perspectives, different cultures to bear on the
Absolutely.
Interpretation and on the expression of it, right? It's
yeah.
just it's way more holistic, it seems to me.
Yeah, and each of the artists, Alexandre Rifford, the writer, Alexandre Bachan, the perfumer, we all were artists who were able to put aside our egos and tell a story. You know, anyone who's an artist who's listening to me is saying, I don't want to change my text and my producer or editor is driving me crazy. Well, maybe if we all give a little bit and we all collaborate a lot, we will achieve in telling history stories, which of course are my passion. Because alone, we're not going to make it.
Yeah, alone, it's wow.
It's too
it's
much
so
of
true.
A struggle.
It's so true.
In this age of funding cuts.
It seems to me, right.
In this age of funding cuts, we're trying to make history important.
Right.
As we sit in this room, outside the window is a monument by Alward. They marched up this street on University Street. They marched up it going to war.
Hmm.
Those ghosts are still there for me.
Right, right. Memory. It really is profound. Tell me, tell me about the letter writer. Two letters a day, one to his wife, one to his kids. Each one had flowers in it.
No.
Oh, it didn't have...
George Stephen Canthy writes two letters a day.
Yep.
He only sends flowers to Celia, who's a year old, because she can't read.
Oh,
so the letters
nice.
Say, to wee Celia from
beautiful,
daddy.
Beautiful.
What's amazing is that the letters also say, from a hedge, from Flanders, you know, from a billet. It's telling us Canadian history. In a time where censorship, of course, was also there. So the letters, he just sends the flowers to Celia. She's a year old. And this is 1916. They're mostly picked in around the Somme area.
Hmm.
And unfortunately, George Stephen Canthy suffers from battle fatigue or post-traumatic stress and is sent to the UK in September 1916. But he has been at the front by that time for at least 3 years. He's one of the first to go over. So he survives, he lives to a grand old age. Celia's mother unfortunately dies right after the war, and Celia grows up in Montreal and lives into her 90s. And her descendants came to the exhibition.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Wow, that must have been quite a moment.
But the woman who I love and admire deeply is Elspeth Angus. Elspeth Angus is George Stephen Canthy's granddaughter.
Okay.
And she is the keeper of the letters. She keeps them all these years.
Right.
Celia gives them to her as a family member, and she adores her grandfather. She has memories. She told me many stories. Now, Elspeth, unfortunately, is in care in Montreal. She had a stroke. But she keeps these flowers and these letters. And I asked her permission to make this exhibition. I asked her permission. I think you have to respect the families from whom these letters come.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I want to come back to the 68,000 names.
Yeah.
But what pushes this guy to write two letters a day? I mean, let's talk about this. So I believe love inspires, this is you, I believe, quote, I believe love inspires loyalty and the pursuit of a common cause, close quote. I think it just says curator, too, in the exhibition.
Yes, it must, because this is an art exhibition. A historian would maybe not say the same statement.
Right.
So that's why it's an art exhibition,
right,
and those
right,
statements
right.
are made by a POV
right,
point
right,
of view artist.
Right, right. So love is a common thread here for sure. Clearly, I've seen your films, I've seen your work, we've talked before. I know it's a thread for you and a theme for you. Is that what's driving this guy? Is it this sense of him wanting to, is it what keeps him connected to home? I mean, in some ways, these questions are easy to answer. I'm a dad. If I'm on the 5,000 miles away trying to kill other people, what's gonna keep me sane?
What are you doing
I'm
it for?
I'm dying from scurvy or diarrhea. Or, you know, why am I even here?
Why
these,
are you
these
there?
These men I'm killing have children. It's
which
just
you have, you've
the
touched
madness,
on. You've
the
touched.
Insanity.
I want to talk about love, but I'm going to talk about vulnerability.
Yes, please. Yeah.
Because you've touched on the very central narrative of the exhibition, which is that I have picked the point in which they were vulnerable.
Hmm.
When McRae was exhausted dies of pneumonia in 1918 after ministering to hundreds of people, when Georges Vanier loses his leg, when Percival Molson has a bullet go through his face, has his face reconstructed, and goes back to die in 1917. When Julia Drummond loses her son Guy, her only son, in 1915, what does she do? She goes and starts the Information Bureau for the Red Cross so that Canadian families can know. What do you do when you want to give up? Do you keep going? And at the end of that day, I think love. And this has been a lesson, David, for me, because I struggle with that concept, let me tell you.
The concept of love. You struggle with that.
Yes. Love in all my films and in all my work. This is where they did it. Julia Drummond's love for her son, her empathy for understanding what other mothers must have gone through when they didn't know what happened. You know, whether it was Vanier's faith, whether it was Jean Briand's, my God, he won the Victoria Cross. How many? 12 people he saved before he died? Mm. These are, what makes you do that? And this comes back, I humbly come back to Gerald Dow, D-Day plus 5, veteran from New Richmond that I interviewed 5 years ago. He says to me, when I came back, my wife, it was my wife that kept me going. I got married. I loved. Ask the Battle for Hong Kong veterans when they came home. Love kept them going. Many of them say their wives got them through it. So I'm very interested in love and conflict and how that keeps you going. That's why it's all over the exhibition. And that's, if I'm not growing as an artist when I make something, if I'm not evolving.
Right.
Then the audience isn't going to evolve with me. I feel you have to have the courage to take that on. That's a certain courage.
So tell me about that evolution. Biggest challenge for you, or one of them. I'm sure there's way more than
understanding.
One.
Understanding. The biggest challenge on this exhibition was understanding that this is not a film.
Right.
You know, you come into a film and you sit there and we've got you for 60 minutes. You're in a theater, you come to Hot Docs and you watch After Circus and 78 minutes, I've got you by the hand.
Kind of captive.
Welcome to museum world.
Yeah.
Somebody comes in, they go in any direction they like. They don't read everything.
Right.
And maybe their kid needs to go to the bathroom.
Right.
And
phone rings.
They've got their phone going.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Now tell me a story and attach me to that story. That's a challenge.
That is a challenge.
I raise my hat to my mentors at the Canadian War Museum. They're the ones that mentored me through this experience, because I don't come from the museum world. I don't. I come from the film world.
Yep.
I can tell you a story. I can tell you that part, but when it comes to understanding museology, please, let's turn to the people who actually know exactly how audiences react, because it was amazing. The text you see was edited 15 times before it went on the wall. Alexander Reifert and myself were tearing our hair out, but they were right. They're right because they understand people. And what are they understanding? They're understanding human nature, exactly what the exhibition's about. They're understanding what people, how people react to story. And that's amazing. And you only have to go to some of the best museums I've ever seen, which are in Ottawa. They're amazing museums. Here, they're amazing. Look at that storytelling. And all I'm trying to say, honestly, is respect it. My goodness, fund it. Help people tell stories.
Right.
Because it's so essential. And those guys are holding on. And so we had mentorship. I had mentorship at the Canadian War Museum for 2 years on this project.
I'm tempted just to do a whole other interview with you right now, finish this one up and do another one about storytelling. I mean, the power of it, the meaning behind it, how we find our future in it, where our values and our morals, and it just, the list goes on, right? How important it is.
I'm going to ask you to come and run a panel for me.
Okay, I'm in. Yeah, I'd love to do that.
I think that you're the guy.
I would love to do that.
Because that would be really interesting. That's a very interesting question. You ask interesting questions.
So thanks. sometimes they don't always have, you know, specific answers. I'm not really interested
answers. We're meandering a little bit.
It's about the conversation. It's about the dialogue. I mean, that's how you get to the next level, it seems to me. So 15 years of interviews, I think, with veterans.
Yes.
And various stories. You've been immersed in other people's lives and histories and so on and memories. So war is inherent to human nature. I'm just kind of trying to create a little bit of context here. Yeah. What do you learn about the future? What do you learn about? We're looking in the crystal ball here, Viveka. Are we not killing each other quite as frequently and often in 120 years?
David,
what do you learn from these?
Are you asking the answer I wish I could give you?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. I'd like to think we're we're getting better at loving each other. I'd like, and that sounds so corny in a way, you know, that's like a, some sort
I'd like
of t-shirt.
To, I'd like to dream that we're getting more present.
Nice. Yeah.
That we're just becoming more present. Be careful of the pace of our life that is moving us further and further away from the essential.
The pace of our, getting us away from the essential.
I mean,
the essential
present,
being each
if
other.
If you think for a moment beyond laws and rules and I'm afraid of losing this land and I'm taking that land.
Right.
That's a human being who gets in a boat and risks their life to escape. Two teenagers got on a plane in West Africa and died trying to get to Europe. And they left a letter. This happened a month ago.
Wow.
They left a letter saying, we're doing this because we're desperate. There's a desperate world out there beyond our narrative here on the corner of Queen University. And I just wish people would try and understand that. And if they did, I don't have the answers. My God,
right.
I wish I could tell
right.
you that we're heading towards peace. But we have to head towards empathy. We have to teach our children empathy.
Right. I mean, maybe that's the, you know, I'm working currently in public engagement. How do you get people to act? What is the call to action if you have a social media campaign what is that? And I don't know what it is here, but maybe it is to say, to teach our children this, to become more
like
empathetic.
Absolutely.
To
contribute.
To contribute, nice.
This is what you do, David Peck.
Yeah, yeah.
And I hope you keep this in your interview.
Oh, okay.
This is how you contribute. This is
nice.
How I contribute.
Thanks.
Because we are artists, and we're artists who, let's not, it's a struggle to be an artist. It's a struggle to do what we're doing. But this is our volunteering. This is how we contribute.
This is our
volunteerism. This is how they contributed.
Yes.
And now we're contributing by doing what we do. And that's important. And unfortunately, I find that sometimes the things that are really important are not being measured.
That's so true. We measure what's easy. We don't measure what's meaningful. We just don't.
That's what we tried to do in the exhibition. Mm. We tried to measure what was meaningful. And I'm trying to say, you've got it in you, all of you today. You have this in you. You have the ability to succeed. You have the ability.
So that's, to me, is a brilliant insight in the sense that we already all have this. We start with this.
It's your human
somehow
nature.
It gets squeezed out. Somehow it gets. And how do we bring out? How do we nurture water? What a beautiful full circle to come back to flowers.
Yeah.
And this idea of growing something that actually it has to be one of the most photographed things in the world. Flowers. They
yes,
have to be, I should
think
say.
So.
Isn't that kind
absolutely.
Of an interesting
it's
insight?
Absolutely. It's why I approach the reef
gardens
on this.
Aren't they beautiful? Aren't they wonderful? And we don't even really know why. Right? They smell great. They look great. They've got
vibrant
colors.
We don't need to
colors.
Know why. We know why on another level.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an intuitive thing. It's already there. How do we
people come into
let's
the exhibition and they stand there and they sort of say, I don't understand why I'm feeling. You don't have to understand.
Nice.
Just come.
It's true. You don't.
And feel this. Understand. And they're like, well, I have a theory that we've honored them. And that they like it. And I don't mind saying this. I have a great-grandmother who's Indigenous, so I have no problem saying that the spirits may be happy with what we have done.
Mm.
And if they weren't, I sure would be hearing about it. So I'm just
glad
that people are coming and connecting to something.
Yeah.
Why did I have a dream one night? I woke up and put 68,000 names on a wall because we should be listening to those points of instinct. Those dreams, we are so far from listening to those things that are so old. In each of our cultures, they exist, but we don't value them.
Well, we're crummy listeners. Well, I mean, let's face it. We're pretty, in the 21st century, we don't listen very well to anyone.
It's because we're always waiting to talk.
Mm. Or text.
If we just listen to the end of the sentence.
You mentioned before the recorder was going something really interesting to me. Was it
40? Uh-oh, wasn't that off the record?
No, I don't think so. Well, maybe some of it was. But
tell
no,
me.
the Indigenous, the First Nations, Métis and Inuit folk
yes.
that fought in World War I.
Yes.
4,800? There was
again,
a large...
Again, I always give credit where it's due. Stacey Barker, my historian guide at the War Museum, confirmed for me that 4,000 Indigenous went to the First World War and came back with little acknowledgement.
Right, I bet, yeah.
little acknowledgement.
So, sadly, we need to wrap this up in a couple of minutes, and I know this is an ongoing conversation, to be sure. You're here till the 25th. Will this exist online in some way? Are you going to try to get this into schools?
I have to answer something else now.
Yeah, go.
Because I know that you're a filmmaker also.
I'm trying.
I'm working on a small project. So I'm going to say something really important.
Okay, good.
There's a theory that you and I are actually making one long film.
Mm.
Our whole life, everything we do, whether it's circuses or exhibitions or films or books, it's actually one thing that we're trying to say. I'm trying to say in this exhibition, love, resilience, hope. Every project I've ever done in the last 20 years has been about that. Come to the exhibition as a visitor and ask yourself, what's the story of your life that you're trying to say? And live it. Have the courage to live it.
Yeah, don't let it end there. So
exactly.
Ask the question, have the insight. That's the call to action. Now go and live it.
And to answer your question, yes, there is a beautiful website for Warflowers.
Nice.
And the most beautiful part of that website, you can see all of the stories. You can even get more history on each of the Canadians. But there's a guest book. And there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of comments and stories that people are sharing with us, because I made this whole exhibition with one word in mind, and it was healing.
Mm.
We have to heal the generations from the First World War to now of these stories. And we have to heal as a society, and we have to heal our PTSD. This is what this is about. So if you have a story to share with us, we're listening, and the artists are reading the website, and we're seeing the stories, and we just wanted to help you with that. That's what we were doing.
Wow. I think that has to be the way we end this part of our conversation. It's ongoing.
You do this every time.
Yeah.
Best interviews ever with you. Incredible. It's because you listen so well.
Warflowers, thank you. Warflowers, a touring art exhibition. It's at the Campbell House Museum in Toronto, University North. West corner, I believe, of University and Queen. We're in the attic right now. How cool is that? Imagine the memory and the history here.
Mm-hmm.
Come and see this. What a pleasure, Viveca. Thank you so much for your time today and for the interview and for the insights. And please come and visit. And online, where can we? Warflowers.ca.
Viveca,
thank you so
thank
much.
Thank you, Dave.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.